Welcome to the audio blog. I'm Paolo, and with me is
Jason.
And we're back for another episode on flavor. To recap, in our previous episodes, we started talking about salty and spicy in our first episode. Then we touched on sweet flavors. And then in our last episode, we were talking about umami. And today, we're going to shake things up a bit, right, Jason?
Yeah, that's right. I really wanted to talk for a bit about acquired taste.
Okay.
This is a topic that I was hoping you could teach me a little bit about, Paolo, because I have a bit of a quirky mission in life.
Mm-hmm.
It's my mission to acquire every acquired taste.
Okay. That's a good one to have.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Pokemon of food. I got to get them all. And by acquired taste, I'm talking about, like, you know, not just anybody, not just some bunch of crazy people that happen to like something, but, like, you know, a good cross section of society. They all like something.
Mm-hmm.
If I see them there enjoying that thing, I really want to enjoy that too, right? So I don't think it's really all that strange, you know. Right. I just want to enjoy as many different kinds of foods as I can. So I'm interested in knowing a bit more about acquired taste and how people acquire it. And maybe what it is, just at a higher level. So I thought maybe I'd start with the story of one thing, one taste that I managed to acquire.
Mm-hmm.
Something I hated right off the bat is Japanese food called natto. So natto is like fermented soybeans,
mm-hmm.
and it looks and smells exactly like that. It's this really sticky brown substance that is absolutely putrid. It looks like if you were cleaning under your fridge, this is the kind of thing that you would find.
I saw a picture of it on Wikipedia, I think, and I thought that was a joke.
It's, yeah,
like somebody, you know, changed the picture.
Slimy and stringy.
It looks like from a horror movie. Like,
yes,
you wake up in a nightmare and that's what they serve you.
It tastes exactly as you'd imagine as well. So we were playing a game one time at a party, yeah, in Japan, and it's a very, very common game that I was forced to play, and it's called Feed the Foreigner. So basically, you take something that no foreigner ever would ever like, and you feed it to them. And so that's what they did. They opened a little package of natto, and they passed it to me, and I ate it, and it was disgusting, and everybody laughed.
Yeah.
It was great. So I stayed away from natto for a few years, and then one day, I went to this sushi restaurant,
mm-hmm.
In my town. It's called Taro Sushi. And I ordered their house roll. Now, in Japan, they don't have a lot of special rolls. It's mostly the nigiri sushi, unlike Vancouver, where it's all rolls.
Mm-hmm.
But they had this one house roll, and in it was natto. And I tried it, and it was exactly the same taste. But it worked, because it was in concert with all the other ingredients, I guess. And a while later, I had your gorgonzola pasta,
right,
the one that's on your blog.
Yeah.
And it reminded me exactly of that. It was the same sort of pungent flavor.
Okay.
So on its own, it was very hard for me to consume. But together with other ingredients, it really worked. And now I can have natto just with a raw egg in it. You mix it up and you eat it just like that. And now I like it. So even though it's exactly the same flavor, now I like it. So what was going on in my head there, Paolo?
Well, you had, I think, from what I read, a built-in mechanism to protect you from things that are spoiled. Fermentation is very much a process that naturally happens when you leave something there outside of the fridge. So, you know, occurs in spoiled food, and we're kind of born to recognize that and avoid it. And this is the same thing for gorgonzola. Is a penicillin, and it's effectively fermenting and eating, feeding itself on the cheese, and then producing, I won't get into the details because they're quite gruesome. But yeah, so that's what you end up eating. And it's pretty crazy if you think about it. So mostly, in this case, I think my question would be the opposite. Why do we like those things?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, it had this flavor that was missing. It was like there was a hole in the flavor, and then you added that to it, and it filled the hole. So
exactly,
even though on its own it was rather revolting, when you put it in there, it works.
So the key, I think, with these flavors is to start easy with a small amount. And, you know, obviously it's going to be diluted in the other flavors. Personally, I like a lot gorgonzola, all kinds of blue cheese. But I think I would recommend people that don't eat blue cheese to start with a very mild gorgonzola dolce, which means sweet, which is very creamy. Or campozola is available here in Canada. I've never seen it in Italy myself. So start there, and then you may discover that we do have something that makes us like this particular flavor. And there are just theories about what that thing is. Some say that it's because it's in us. It's very earthy. It's, in a way, a smell that we've smelled before.
Oh, I see what you're getting at.
It's associated, obviously, with negative content, but it doesn't matter when you take off your shoes, but it is, let's say it.
Come on. I was thinking when you've gone hiking for 3 days and you come home.
For
some reason, I really feel like gorgonzola now.
You probably don't feel like you taste like, but that's quite interesting that we sort of get into this mode where we discover something that somehow we already know, but in a different context, and obviously we have to re-educate, reprogram ourselves to actually like it, and then once you take that thought away, it is totally an enjoyable experience. It hits that spot. It's mostly actually smell and not very much flavor. Mm. And it complements other flavors. And it becomes a very, very strong liking for a lot of people. They just adore
It's about getting over the initial biologically programmed disgust, perhaps.
In this case, for sure. Okay. And probably the same for natto. Because it does have the same fermented smell, evidently. I never tried it.
But. Well, a lot of people in Japan actually don't like natto. It's probably less than half, depending on the region where you're
okay.
in.
Okay, so maybe like it. Slightly different for gorgonzola, which I think the majority of Italians do like.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but I think...
Natto is pretty extreme. I mean, just the look of it is pretty crazy. But there's also... I was thinking the other day about coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there is something that people don't naturally like, I don't think. If you've ever given coffee to a child, it's pretty entertaining watching them trying to drink it, right? So I was wondering, like, why do people start liking coffee? And in Canada, the path to coffee is very, very well defined, right? You go to Tim Hortons and you order the double-double.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Let's explain for the non-Canadians.
The double-double, yeah. I didn't actually know that was a Canadian-only term.
Yeah.
It's basically two cream, two sugar.
Right.
You mix that in there, and the sugar gets rid of the bitterness, right? And the cream gets rid of the heat, I guess. And the
for sure.
And the concept of you drinking an oily black substance, right? That's gone. Or at least tones it down a little. So it's not, you're not really drinking coffee. It's more like a coffee-themed beverage at that point. But eventually, you'll put in a bit less, maybe just one cream, one sugar, which, by the way, is not called single-single. There's no such thing as single-single.
I just didn't know that.
Yeah. And then one day, maybe you're just feeling wild and you decide to have it black. And you say, oh, that's what coffee tastes like. It's not bad.
Yeah. So I think that's something going on there. So you got yourself used to something new by easing into it. So you mentioned cream and sugar. Obviously, coffee is bitter. We are not born to like bitter things. And also, you mentioned cream. Drip coffee in North American coffee is not very oily at all, actually. Because of the way it's brewed, is nothing like espresso. We tend to bring in all of the natural cream. The cream is made of the fat that is emulsified during the process. So the cream, in fact, adds that amount of fat and makes you taste more than just the bitterness. Makes you taste the actual coffee molecules that now can come more in contact with your tongue and stick to it for long enough so you can actually taste them.
Crazy. I never thought of coffee that way before. Do you think that every time you drink a coffee?
Well, no. But I also am one of those that drink black coffee. And I don't put any sugar, except for cold coffee. So when I have an iced coffee, That's something that I was thinking about it. I don't know why I do that, but I do put some sugar or a sweetener, maybe vanilla sweetener even, in cold coffee. And I would never, ever do that in warm coffee.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, in Japan, the cold coffee is very, very popular. They have it in the vending machines there. And a lot of them are really highly sweetened.
Yeah. I think one explanation that came to me is that temperature make you taste sweet things more. So if I put sugar into something hot, I'm going to taste the sugar so much more. So that's one explanation. I don't like the taste of sweet coffee. So I would have to put a very, very, very small amount to appreciate it. But the reverse is not true, because cold coffee should be less bitter. Therefore, I should be able to withstand it without sugar more. So it's a bit...
Maybe it's not linear. Maybe the bitterness stays more than the
sugar.
The sugar. How about you, Paolo? What sort of acquired tastes do you have as someone who's come to Canada?
So for me, it's a very good question, because I do have some acquired tastes and some that I still haven't acquired that I know are out there to be conquered. There's people that love those flavors, but I haven't gotten there yet. So the flavors that I've conquered are sushi, and you know, just eating raw fish.
Okay.
It was something that I never thought I could do.
Was that the flavor or the concept?
Mostly the concept, but the flavor is there too. Because raw fish does have a distinct smell.
Yeah, and the texture.
Texture too. And I think to an Italian that never traveled, it would be a pretty strong concept to put in front of their face. It's like pretty much like eating raw chicken.
Yeah, I see, yeah. I've done that actually in Japan.
Okay, so in Japan...
it's very, very lightly boiled, like for about 10 seconds.
Okay.
And they pull it, so it's mostly raw, yeah.
So it's raw inside.
Yeah, and you can actually go to places where it's entirely raw.
But, it makes sense. I do eat some raw beef. In carpaccio or tartare.
Okay, yeah.
So I do understand that. But I didn't have this problem with meat. I did have a problem with fish, because there's some concept maybe that fish is not safe, or I don't know where it comes from.
Sure.
It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. The other one is cilantro. I did conquer that. Italians, generally, all of my friends hate it. They can't eat cilantro in any way.
That's crazy. Cilantro is one of the things my parents never cooked with. And then... after I went away to school and learned about it, I just loved it from the very start.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What clicked for you? For me, it was very gradual. I had to put just a little bit and a little bit incorporate into some dishes. So typically Indian or Thai. And then in that context, and only in that context, I would never, ever put it on pasta or anything like that. But in that context, it does bring in the right amount of freshness and the right note that completes the dish, and it's wonderful. I still haven't acquired dill pickles.
Oh, yeah. I love dill pickles. But I grew up with dill pickles. My mom used to make them, and other kinds of pickles. But a lot of people in North America also don't like dill pickles.
So that's really new to me. I think they are very much liked.
Well, just sit in the McDonald's every now and then, and you can see people pulling them off.
Pulling them off the odd one.
Their cheeseburger. Yep.
Okay, so I can see that it's strong. So not everybody likes any strong flavor. And then finally, I'll never, I think, get around to liking root beer.
That's a shame. That's funny. That is a taste I actually unacquired.
Oh, okay.
I used to love root beer. And then one day, somebody told me that it tasted like toothpaste.
Yep.
And ever since that day, whenever I try root beer, all I can taste is toothpaste.
So see, this goes in line with what we said earlier with the earthy flavors. You have to lose that concept that is spoiled, and then you can start to like the cheese.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Now that you know that this tastes exactly like that mouthwash, then you would find revolting the thought that you could swallow that.
I see.
So it may just be an association of ideas.
Although, you know, Paolo, if you put ice cream in that root beer, it's fantastic.
Oh, no, let's not go back to the float. Okay, no, for me, the root beer is very much mouthwash that you swallow and it actually cools off. It's like a menthol type of thing. It cools off the inside of you for hours. It's like a fuel cell that slowly releases energy, cools you off for hours after you
sounds
drank.
Sounds great to me.
I only had it once. I don't know.
Maybe you drank too much of it.
I did drink an entire. I wanted to like it. So that's the thing. I was new to Canada and I was very excited. It came out of a bad situation. I couldn't find anything to eat and I didn't know enough English to ask for what I wanted. So I saw a McDonald's. So I walked in there. We do have Minidly too. And I admit that occasionally I do like a good burger at McDonald's. So I ordered my burger and I said, and a beer.
You ordered a beer at McDonald's?
Why not? I mean, it is.
I wish I could do that here. Actually, it'd be a more civilized country if we could order beer.
That's another podcast altogether. Yes. But yeah, in Italy, they do serve beer. It's kind of a cheap type of beer, but it does go with the burger. Trust me, very well. And the guy, without asking any question, gave me a root beer, which is probably what he thought I intended. So he gave me that and like, you know, medium or without specifying the size. I don't know.
Yeah, regular size. You didn't know it was root beer then?
No.
You thought it was real beer?
Well, I realized very quickly that it wasn't, obviously. So the fact that it came with a straw was a good hand. And then I started sipping this thing and the first taste is actually okay. Because you get the sweetness, the bubbliness, something minty that you don't mind, but then it goes down and it starts to have an effect. So I wanted to make that effect go away by drinking a little bit more and see if it works itself out. I don't know what I was thinking.
So you OD'd on Canada.
I OD'd on Canada on my third day. And then I went on and on all day feeling like crap because of this thing. And I honestly never had it since.
Ah, that was just homesickness. You try it again. It'll be better.
I don't know. And, you're in.
Drink it at the end because then you don't have to brush your teeth afterwards.
All right, Jason. I think we got to the end of our fourth episode and we will get back for the next one very shortly.
See you next week.